Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world? So welcome to the 528th edition of SDG. And this is the 2021 crisis update number 41. And then later in this message, folks, we're going to tie it all into that story, that classic story that we've all heard probably when we were little kids in Bible school, the story of David and Goliath. Now, you know, David had a powerful master. Now, you may be wondering, powerful master? But he beat Goliath. Yeah, that's right, folks. David had a powerful master. The Bible says in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 45, that David said to Goliath, "You come to me with sword, spear, and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." So, folks, I hope you stay tuned to learn how we can go from victory to victory as we slay giants, just like King David did. And the bottom line, folks, as always, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world because we're God's people just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity. And be sure to stay tuned to find out the latest news that the mainstream media is never going to tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, it all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as always, folks, we're going to start with something from a past show. Now, last week, in our Back to the Future episode, we talked about the Nazis' managed healthcare system. And I mentioned a documentary about the Nazis killing nurses. It was called Caring Corrupted. And what I'd like to do, I promised you, would play the introduction to this documentary. It's only about a minute and 10 seconds long. And what it'll do is just give you a flavor for the situation in that very advanced modern culture back in the 1920s and early 1930s as Hitler rose to power. And then draw some parallels, folks. In fact, these are ominous parallels. Draw those parallels to what's happening right now in the ICUs all across the country with these COVID patients. So just take a listen.
The economic situation in Germany following World War I and the Versailles Treaty led to the wholesale implementation of Hitler's policies. They started killing children first, and then a bit later on started killing adults. It's not surprising that the nurses in the Nazi era got caught up in all this. The propaganda was everywhere about killing people who were considered life unworthy of life. Useless feeders was the term they used. The nurses were the ones who held the children while they were being killed. They gave them the overdoses of drugs. They were the ones who put them out on the verandas to die of hypothermia. The nurses were the ones who withheld the feeding so the children would die of starvation.
So, you know, folks, history has a way of repeating itself. I just heard that a governor, and I didn't have time to get this into the show notes, but I just heard that a governor passed an executive order ordering the emergency rooms and the ICU units in hospitals across his state to deny treatment to those who are unvaccinated. Folks, this is exactly what happened in Nazi Germany. Like I said, history has a crazy way of repeating itself. But hey, let's move on. Something a little lighter, okay? Remember back, must have been about 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were one of the first to play the rap song, which is now a viral rap song, and that's the Let's Go Brandon, which is now number one on iTunes without any mainstream media promos. In fact, just the opposite. Censoring of this everywhere. It's been taken off of YouTube, Twitter, TikTok. But have you heard this newest one? It's titled LGB. And it's not what you think, folks. Let's have a listen to this.
LGB. 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 LGB.
They say
LGB
everywhere
I go.
LGB.
What it means?
I don't know.
LGB.
Whatever it is.
LGB.
Kamala, help me. Please. Please.
All righty then.
I like you.
LGB.
That Let's Go Brandon, right?
LGB.
This means Let's Go Brandon.
No.
LGB.
Sounds like Let's Go Brandon, I guess.
LGB.
All right.
Let's go Brandon.
I am Cornholio.
Chance.
LGB.
Right wing and left wing.
LGB.
Go, you know the thing.
LGB.
You don't sing.
Get back.
LGB.
And you claim black.
LGB.
Let's go, Brandon.
LGB.
Let's go, Brandon.
LGB.
Let's go, Brandon.
FJB.
Let's go, Brandon.
I'm Joe Biden, and I
forgot
this message.
Yeah, you sure did, Joe. Hey, you know, folks, it's gaining so much momentum across this country that I believe a majority of Democrats now believe that Joe Biden is incompetent and unfit for office, and they actually have voter remorse, though few that did, in fact, vote for him. But I want to keep moving, folks. We have a lot of information for today's show. You know, about 8 weeks ago, maybe 9 weeks ago, we started reviewing that classic audio on Paper Money by Stephen Jacobson. It's titled Wake Up America. Folks, all you have to do is type that into your search engine, and you have to use something other than Google because Google's censoring it. But all you have to do is type in Wake Up America. You'll go right to his website. But what I've been doing is playing five-minute clips. We're on part nine, Stephen Jacobson, Wake Up America. So let's call up that clip, and let's have a listen, picking up where we left off last week.
Under fractional reserve banking, the amount of credit a bank can create is tied to the wealth on deposit for which the currency can be redeemed. This limitation was removed when gold was confiscated from the public to protect the currency system based on that gold. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, people who had gold on deposit in the banks wanted the banks to honor their contract to redeem the paper currency for gold. The fraudulent nature of fractional reserve banking was at risk of being exposed because there was not enough gold on deposit in the banks to redeem all Federal Reserve notes issued promising payment in gold. On March 6, 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, by executive proclamation, declared a national emergency and closed down the banking system for 2 days on the recommendation of the Board of Directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. On March 9th, Congress passed the Emergency Banking Act, declaring a national emergency and conferring on the President the extraordinary authority of the War Powers Act and the Trading with the Enemy Act of October 6, 1917, amended to place all money matters of American citizens under its jurisdiction. It became illegal for U.S. citizens to own gold under penalty of up to a $10,000 fine and or up to 10 years imprisonment. People turned in their gold and gold certificates in exchange for Federal Reserve notes of created dollars based on debt which bore a promise of redemption in lawful money. The circulation of gold coins and redemption of paper currency for gold ended, leaving silver dollars as the only lawful money available. Silver was eventually eliminated from the money system, leaving the American people with a totally debauched money system of irredeemable paper currency and copper nickel-clad tokens that represent a debt owed to the owners of the Federal Reserve banking system, the payment of which is guaranteed by the collateral of all property and income of all U.S. citizens. When banks cannot honor their contract to redeem their notes for gold or silver coin, they are, in fact, bankrupt. The contract between the people and the Federal Reserve printed on each banknote promising to pay in lawful money was invalidated because the system went bankrupt and because the amended version of the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 placed all U.S. citizens in the category of enemy, and no contract is considered valid between enemies. American citizens were declared to be the enemy by their own government, for indeed they would be if the people ever discovered what had happened to their money. It is the responsibility of honest government to ensure that the money system serve the nation and not enslave the nation. We can be self-governing only when public servants are dependent on something citizens provide. When gold and silver coin were used as money, the people had control over their government. The golden rule of finance is that he who has the gold makes the rules. If the public has the gold, the public makes the rules. If the central government and central bank have the gold, they make the rules. The loss of the right to trade in wealth, such as gold and silver coin, enslaves the people to those who create and control what is being used as money. All it took to enslave America and the world was to convince people that paper and credit are money. The federal government and the Federal Reserve have the power to create unlimited amounts of credit because credit does not exist. It is not a tangible substance, but an idea represented by bookkeeping entries and computer symbols. The distinction between free men and slaves is whether or not they are paid for their labor. He who labors for money that the first user got for nothing is a slave to the first user, the banks. The Constitution established the use of both gold and silver coin as standard money to ensure the equal buying power of every dollar at all times. Honest money is nothing more than a transportation system to move goods and provide services. A credit system is nothing more than a slave system designed to control the population and all economic activity. Deficit spending is as phony as our money and illogical. How does one spend a debt? To pay means to deliver a substance as money, like gold and silver coin. Where there is no substance, there is no payment, only pretended payment. Banks do not really lend, they only pretend to lend. They put no money in a borrower's account. They only make bookkeeping entries that are reduced as the borrower writes checks against imagined deposits. By charging interest on a loan they do not make, banks impart psychological value to numbers of absolutely nothing. Charging interest sustains the illusion that banks loan something of value when all they do is rent illusions.
That sums it up, folks. It's one big illusion. You know, he had a line in there where he said, he who labors to the person who first got the money for nothing is a slave to that first person. Now, the reason I bring that up is just think about that word person for a minute. And then a little bit later in the show, I'm going to tell you what it really means. You know, folks, this past week, over 200 countries and over 30,000 quote-unquote delegates from these countries wrapped up what was known as the COP26 conference in Glasgow, Ireland. Now, COP stands for the Conference of Parties. This is so crazy, folks. But the parties were signing up for the UN framework for the Convention of Climate Change. Notice it's no longer global warming. It's now climate change. Well, certainly, folks, climates are changing all the time. Now, the COP is a convenient and totally non-distinct name that can involve anybody from two parties up to 200 countries. You know, it's this obscurity, it's this wishy-washiness, this lack of detail, which gives these people, the politically correct and the woke today, the guise or the cover to do all these crazy things they're doing. You know, these bureaucrats, these Luciferians, these control freaks, they have very little regard for the economic consequences of all their silliness. They truly don't. Now, the stated main purpose of this COP group is to have global emissions, split them in half by 2030, and then what they want to do is reach a net zero energy pollution by the year 2050. And that's all I can say about that, folks. It's one big colossal lie, and that's all it is, folks. It's a lie from the pits of hell. You know, these control freaks, they're nothing but liars and hypocrites, and this is why I say they're hypocrites. Did you hear about all the limos that were sitting outside of the conference hall idling for hours as these reptoids, these Luciferians, were inside plotting their global takeover scheme? And then Brandon, I mean the imposter in chief Biden himself, brought a fleet of over 80 vehicles on multiple cargo aircraft to attend a meeting. This is insane, folks. It's totally beyond insane. It's absurd.
Gosh. Holy. Holy. Gosh.
Yep. You know, Gomer, we could have put this news report in the Absurdian report, but folks, I have better ones for that. So in Glasgow, we can see that these Luciferians, this motley mixture of bureaucrats and members of the elite, are flying around in their private jets and their jumbo jets. And why? To preach to the world the elimination of the carbon footprint by 2050. Don't you see the hypocrisy here? These climate cops, who, and isn't it crazy how their acronyms always say something? So they're talking about climate, and their group is called COPs. So they're climate cops who met in Glasgow. They're telling the world that carbon emissions will be neutral by 15. Why? Because they decree it. And the temperature won't rise more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. Newsflash, folks, we can't control that. The primary drivers for global temperature are the sun and volcanism. And there's no talk about what's going on in La Palma. You know, all this effort, everything that they're trying to do in these 200 countries can get wiped out by one volcanic eruption. And then these current alternative energy sources like windmills and solar panels, they simply cannot meet the need currently being met by natural gas, coal, nuclear. They simply cannot achieve that level of energy output. So it's all hypocrisy. You know, where these politicians and elite could have a bigger influence is on the world economy if they were honest. Honest about the money system and would recognize the truths that Stephen Jacobson is giving us here in these Wake Up America segments. However, we've reached this point of no return right now. The system is about to be reset. It's the global reset, folks. Global debt has grown exponentially since 1971 when Richard Nixon took the world off the gold standard and linked the U.S. dollar to the petrodollar, and that's the source of all the wars since back then. To maintain this control over the global money system. You know, in 1970, the global debt was under $5 trillion. Folks, that's the kind of money they spend in these stupid spending packages today. So 30 years later, come up to about the year 2000, the global debt was about $87 trillion. And then we had the financial crisis at the end of the Bush regime, right before Obama came in, you know, the credit issue and the TARP monies that were being put out led to an explosive growth in the global debt. Now it's over $300 trillion. $300 trillion. You can't even comprehend this. You know, I've talked in the past, if we expressed a dollar as a second on a clock, how many seconds would $1 million be? Well, $1 million would be about 11 days in seconds. So how much would $1 billion be? Well, $1 billion would be about 30 years. So if $1 million is 11 days expressed in seconds, and $1 billion is 30 years expressed in seconds, what would a trillion be? Well, folks, this is where numbers get so staggering. $1 trillion expressed in seconds would actually be 30,000 years. So think about this now. 10 trillion would be 300,000 years, and 100 trillion, are you ready for this, would be 3 million years. And global debt is 300 trillion. So we're looking at 9 million years of seconds if each second represented a dollar. And again, at that point, you're beyond even being able to comprehend it. I know I can't. So we have this problem, and it cannot be solved. So there must be a reset, and they have no excuse to blame it on because of the fact that President Trump upset this whole thing. And maybe that was by design. I don't know. But there are some things you can do. And I'm warning you, folks, you need to be prepared for the greatest financial crisis ever in the history of the world. And here's a few things you can do. Get out of debt, or at least as much as you can, and make certain that you structured your debt that you do have properly. Sell all your bubble assets, and I'm referring to things like stocks and bonds and certain types of property, speculative real estate in particular. Now, the one thing that's always valuable is a home on land. So a house on land is always valuable if that land is tillable and you can grow food on it. You should also own some tangible assets like gold and silver. Cut down on your expenses so that you can manage with lower income or higher costs on things because of inflation. And think about your family and your friends who may need help. That's a very important thing. So set a little aside for them. And I'm telling you, folks, I'm going to go back to the gold comment again. Now, you can also do gold in good mining stocks and some of the other elements of the gold system or the precious metal system. But I cannot encourage you enough to purchase gold and silver, physical gold and silver. And I'm telling you right now, if you listen to most contemporary investment counselors, it's called dirt by some of them. In fact, the one Christian financial expert just forgot his name, but he literally calls gold dirt. But I'm telling you, folks, it's very important, and it should be part of your plan for this great reset. But right now, we have to keep moving. It's time for Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, let's get started with the coronavirus heist. Sorry, my mic was off. That's all we have to do, folks. That's all we have to do. Just say no. And you're going to see more of that a little bit later on. I hope you stay tuned for the Ken Corner segment today, because I'm going to share some bombshell information with you there. But you know, folks, the terminations are beginning. The forced terminations due to this illegal, unlawful mandate, quote unquote, from Imposter-in-Chief Brandon. I mean, why do I keep calling him Brandon? I mean the Imposter-in-Chief, JoJo Biden. These forced terminations are starting with healthcare workers. So why would so many in the healthcare area refuse the jab? Well, here's why. I have a report from a nurse in Maryland updating us on the adverse effects she's seeing in her area of practice.
I'm a registered nurse, BSN, case manager in Baltimore. My grassroots, boots on the ground report is that there's a lot of patients being injured. I've never seen anything like this. Since January, I've experienced personally 6 deaths, and I've lost count of the injuries. And we're not talking about typical adverse events like fevers, chills, sore muscles. I'm talking about things like urinating clots of blood, paresthesias, gastroparesis, altered mental status, respiratory arrest, cardiac arrest, new onset seizures, new onset diabetes. I have patients who can't walk anymore. Patients who keep complaining that their feet and their hands are burning, they forget where they are. I've just never seen anything like this in all my years of practicing medicine. What I'm seeing now as time goes on is patients who were given the shot months ago that are now showing up in the hospital with equally strange and confusing events. Practitioners see this, their dissonance just flows. And they either ignore it or literally don't know what to do with it. Every healthcare professional working with patients across this country has to see what's going on. What else do I see on the ground? A lot of great suffering that isn't getting met with good care because we have no idea what to do with these patients who have been injured by, frankly, an experimental treatment, and there's no protocols to treat them. There's no information how to help them, and even breaking through the cognitive dissonance of physicians to accept this patient has been vaccine injured is a chasm. It's a huge chasm.
She said it all there where she referred to the cognitive dissonance that's in so many physicians' minds right now. You know, she observed people urinating blood clots. Well, my sister is a nurse in the surgical group at the local hospital, and she told me that, she does the pre-op and post-op. So she, before, in terms of counseling and what they should expect, how they should prepare before their operation, and then she's the one that watches them during the recovery. And she told me a 60-year-old healthy woman who she's known for years, just from other things that the woman's been in the hospital for. My sister is a very experienced registered nurse. She told me that this woman came in for a simple bladder lift that a lot of women that age do when they start to develop incontinence. And everything was going well. Her bleeding after the procedure was a little longer than normal, but within the standard. So she let the physician know that everything was going well. There wasn't any aides to wheel her down to the door for her husband to pick her up. So my sister wheeled her down. And when she got down there and stood up to get in the car with her husband, she started to bleed profusely through her vagina. And all these blood clots and awful clotted blood was coming out of her right through her panties and everything, and she had to take her back up, rush her back up. They had to get her on multiple units of plasma, and the surgeon was totally beside himself, didn't know what was going on. And my sister mentioned that she had heard some of these reports, and in fact, she's seen it before, and the doctor totally, totally ignored her. Didn't want to hear it. Folks, that's cognitive dissonance. So anyways, folks, the nurses are seeing it. Certain doctors are. And we have some friendly ones here in Western Pennsylvania. They'll prescribe you ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. They'll do some other sorts of treatments to help. But for the vast majority of the physicians out there, folks, it's la-la land. It truly is. So like I said, these awakened nurses in particular, but some of the physicians are beginning to be fired. Why? Because they don't want this poison in their body. And here is the actual termination of one such nurse who who works for Kaiser, one of the largest healthcare systems in the country. Listen to this as she's walked out. We could call this the walk of honor. But listen to her account.
I am being escorted out of Kaiser Permanente Hospital for my religious beliefs because I don't want to get the jab. And I asked all day for someone to explain to me why my sincerely held religious beliefs are not good enough for Kaiser. And no one was able to do that for me. Bye. So now they're escorting me out because I wanted an answer, and I'm not leaving without an answer. And I have some nurses here who are standing with me in solidarity, and I appreciate that. And I just want all of you to count the cost. I want you to watch this and think, what really matters to me? Because I am willing to lose my safety and security, my house, everything for my freedom. And I want you to think about that.
Going down. Yep. Going down.
Let me ask you, do you believe in religious freedom?
I do.
Well, Kaiser doesn't. Do you believe in religious freedom? Do you believe in religious freedom?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, Kaiser doesn't believe in religious freedom because they are not accepting my religious exemption based on my sincerely held religious beliefs. So, that's a problem. Love you. All day I've been asking for someone from HR to come talk to me about why my religious exemption was not good enough for Kaiser. So I've been asking and asking, and no one will give me an answer. So that was at 10:45 this morning that I was told I'm now being placed on unpaid administrative leave for no reason. I showed up to work this morning. Happy.
So this poor nurse, along with tens of thousands of other healthcare workers across the country, are losing their jobs for refusing an experimental genetic jab that's been rebranded as a vaccine because the CDC and the FDA have redefined vaccine not once but twice during this scamdemic, folks, as they did with the words epidemic, pandemic, and herd immunity. The only way they even had this scam become the least bit viable is by redefining the meaning of words. Isn't that what they did with money too? So these healthcare workers know that the jabs are killing and severely injuring people all across the country. And then this out of India, this is an update. 71 of the 75 districts in Uttar Pradesh, India, its most populated state, reported no COVID-19 cases in 24 hours after implementing the ivermectin protocol. This is not being reported on the news, but it goes even further than that. So after these COVID cases plummeted in India, thanks to these new rules to promote the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine protocols on a massive scale. And folks, this isn't the only area in the world where this is happening. Japan has similar results. So 33 districts in Uttar Pradesh, India, have now become completely free from COVID-19. Did you hear that, folks? It's a scamdemic. So the state's estimated that their population of 241 million people, folks, that's a significant portion, about two-thirds of the population in the United States. So if it can happen there, some people argue, well, some of these areas, these countries, they're so small in population. Folks, this is a state in the country, India, that has a population larger than most countries in the world and almost as large as the United States. So it's the most highly populated province in India, and it's now COVID-free because they're using something analogous or similar to the Zalewski protocol, which includes ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D3, and a few other very simple and affordable compounds. So what would happen in the United States if this was applied? Oh, guess what would happen? The entire scam would crumble. We ought to ask Dr. Fauci about that, huh? But what I want to get moving on to is this expose on Pfizer that's now playing on one of the media networks in India. Now, this is the type of journalistic expertise or excellence, I should say, that used to be present in the United States. But now our media has become nothing but lapdogs for the establishment. And I think we all know why. To You by Pfizer, do you remember that? Anyways, listen to this report. It's 7 minutes and 20 seconds long, and it's a report on Pfizer. And this is what the Indian people are hearing, yet the Americans aren't.
Talking about common good, Wuhan virus vaccines are supposed to be a global public good. But what happens when a vaccine manufacturer starts bullying? Governments are silenced, supplies are halted, and profits take precedence over saving lives. I'm not describing a hypothetical situation here. I am describing what Pfizer is doing. The American pharma giant, it is doing all of this. It is bullying countries to submit to its demands. We first reported about this back in February this year. While countries like India are sending free vaccines to poorer nations, there are companies like Pfizer which are bullying governments. Pfizer asked to be compensated for the cost of any future lawsuits. Pfizer wanted Argentina to put, and listen to this, put its bank reserves, its military bases, and its embassy buildings at stake as collateral. These are Pfizer's demands. Look at this. Number one, Brazil waives the sovereignty of its assets abroad in favor of Pfizer. That the rules of the land be not applied on Pfizer. Number three, that Brazil take into consideration a delay in delivery. Number four, that Pfizer is not penalized for it, for a delay in delivery. And number five, in case of any side effects, Pfizer be exempted from all civil liability. 8 months have passed since we reported this. Pfizer has not changed. It is still putting profits above public health. It is still forcing governments to bend to its will. An advocacy group has thrown up more details of what Pfizer does. It has accessed some confidential contracts of Pfizer. And we have a copy. These contracts are with 9 countries and blocks. And the details are shocking. Desperate countries are being forced to make humiliating concessions to Pfizer. We went through the entire report. We found 6 very important points worth highlighting. Number one, Pfizer has the right to silence governments. It has forced countries to not talk about the deals they strike for shots. Number two, Pfizer controls the donations of its shots, not the country that buys them. Pfizer will decide where the shots go. Number three, Pfizer has secured an intellectual property waiver for itself, and this clause is particularly disturbing. If Pfizer is accused of intellectual property theft, governments will pay, not the company. Number four, if there are disputes, private arbitrators and not public courts will decide on them. Number five, Pfizer can go after state assets to secure its compensation. And number six, Pfizer calls the shots on all key decisions. It decides delivery timelines and more. These are very serious revelations. I'll give you some more details. Number one, Pfizer is silencing governments. How? Through contracts. These airtight contracts are at the center of everything. They can silence governments in ways you can't even imagine. Look at what happened in Brazil. Pfizer agreed to supply its Wuhan virus vaccines to Brazil. And it sneaked in this clause in the agreement to force Brazil to not share any specifics about its deal with Pfizer. Let me read it out for you. This is what it says. The Brazilian government is prohibited from making any public announcement concerning the existence, subject matter, or terms of the agreement, or commenting on its relationship with Pfizer without the prior written consent of the company. In other words, Brazil cannot talk about the Pfizer deal until it gets an approval from Pfizer in writing. This basically is a private company muzzling a government. And that's not all. Pfizer also gets to decide who'll get the shot. Suppose someone wants to donate Pfizer shots to Brazil. Can they do it? They cannot. The Pfizer agreement restricts Brazil from accepting donations. No one can donate Pfizer vaccines to this country. They cannot use the Pfizer shot until they buy it. What happens if Brazil does not comply with these rules? The consequences will be serious. Let me quote from the report again. If Brazil were to accept donated doses without Pfizer's permission, it would be considered an incurable material breach of their agreement, allowing Pfizer to immediately terminate the agreement. Upon termination, Brazil would be required to pay the full price for any remaining contracted doses. So Brazil will have to cough up the entire payment, and Pfizer won't even have to supply the full consignment of Wuhan virus shots. What happens if someone accuses Pfizer of stealing its vaccine technology, of intellectual property theft? The government will be forced to defend Pfizer. It's unbelievable. We had to read this twice to let it sink in. And guess what? At least four countries have been forced to protect Pfizer's patent. Meaning these governments are defending Pfizer for intellectual property theft. While the company is free to use anyone's intellectual property as it pleases. Colombia is one of these victims. I'll explain with an example. Suppose a domestic vaccine maker or any pharma company in Colombia goes to court. And they accuse Pfizer of infringing their vaccine patent. Who will be the one fighting that case? Not Pfizer. Even though they're the accused party, it's not Pfizer and their lawyers who will be in court. It will be the Colombian government. The government will have to defend Pfizer. And if they lose the case, it will be the Colombian government that will have to pay the settlement, not Pfizer. What if these governments want to get out of these tough contracts? They won't be able to sue Pfizer at home. The matter will go to a secret panel of three private arbitrators in New York. Pfizer will be tried as per New York law and not the laws of the land where it sells vaccines. And these countries will pay heavily if they lose in arbitration. Pfizer can ask a government to shift control of state assets to compensate for losses. What kind of assets are we talking about here? Practically anything that a sovereign government owns. Foreign bank accounts, foreign investments, commercial property, state-owned airlines, even oil companies. Pfizer can take over any or all of these from a government. Basically, everything happens on Pfizer terms once a country decides to buy its vaccine. Even the delivery of shots is decided by the company. In Brazil, in Albania, in Colombia, Pfizer gets to decide the delivery timetable for vaccines and the countries will have to agree to whatever they're given, whenever they're given. Pfizer, of course, gets to decide the price. It sets the delivery timelines. It accepts accountability for nothing. And in case someone sues the company, it's the government that foots the bill for the damages, not Pfizer. There is no other way to describe Pfizer's business practices. This is vaccine terrorism.
That's what it is, folks. Vaccine terrorism. So would you trust your health to a company with these sorts of unethical business practices? Would you? Did you hear that one line there at the end where she said that delivery is controlled by Pfizer? Now, as you start to learn how to critically think, what you have to say to yourself is, oh, that reminds me of that report out by Dr. Michael Yeadon, the former Pfizer director or VP of technology, who said that 5% of all the lot numbers from Pfizer contributed to 100% of the adverse reactions. So it could be that Pfizer is controlling the delivery of the specific lots of material that are causing the adverse reactions. And there is a lot of speculation now, and I'm waiting for the whistleblower to come out and admit that a lot of these vaccines in various areas are nothing but placebos. You know, the phase 3 study is actually being done right now, folks. And if you look at any of the FDA documentation, it says right there that the final phase 3 results won't be in until sometime late in 2024 or even into 2025. Yet now, 5 to 11-year-olds can be jabbed? This is absurdity, folks. But right now, it's time to move on to our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, right, BLM, police reform, the 2020 election, all merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called kabu theater. In Japanese, ka means salt, boo means dance. Ki means skill from the verb, kabu meaning to slam or to sway. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Or will hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all, Trump, bad, must go. Good is bad, bad is good. Up and down, light is dark. It's all kabu theater, folks. Prepping the masses for agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
And there's no better name for it than Kabuki Theater, folks. Did you hear this week CEO Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook, who, by the way, they gobbled up Instagram, WhatsApp, and Oculus? They're now naming their corporation Meta. Now, you may be wondering why. Why would they do this? Well, there's a lot of people in Israel right now poking fun at this name change because in Hebrew, that word means death. And it's very interesting. But during the announcement, there was a song being played, and it was by the Universal Death Squad. And I would like to just play a little bit of the song that was being played behind Zuckerberg's voiceover as he announced the new name change, just so you can get a flavor for this music. And maybe you could just go out and call up Universal Death Squad and you'll see what they're all about. But here's what was playing in the background. Okay, I think you got the idea there. So that's the music playing in the background as Zuckerberg, you know, relative to Soros, a lot of people don't realize that, but he's actually a nephew or a distant great-nephew of George Soros. He's got a lot of his funding from his uncle, and he's involved with the CIA, folks. They fund this. This is one of the hugest, most massive databases with regard to facial recognition. Facebook, come on. Anyways, so Facebook bought up Instagram and WhatsApp, and this name change is anything but normal, folks. So that name Meta, and now he's actually saying we're going to create the metaverse. It's a combination of three media. So that term metaverse is the prefix meaning beyond, or, you know, beyond death, so to speak, and then universe were brought together, and that was first done, it was coined by this novelist named Snow Crash, and it's a science fiction book written by Neal Stephenson. So Snow Crash is the first time that was used, and like, if you go to the Oxford Dictionary, I guess that's what they would tell you. But it's a symbol for a new social medium, and that symbol is actually depicted as a snake eating its own tail, you know, the Ouroboros. And you know what that means, folks? There's so much meaning here. So much. You know, you have to almost be brain dead not to see all this stuff happening all around us. The devil's coming out with the greatest deception in the history of the world. And why? To capture the minds and souls of people. And yet many are still not convinced. They think there's a vaccine out there that's going to help them. And that's nothing but a lie. You know, in Christianity, the snake is not a good symbol, folks. And neither is the dragon. Yet Zuckerberg comes out with a serpent biting its tail. The Ouroboros has its new logo for its new company, Meta. And then it admits they're going to create the metaverse. So what does the Ouroboros mean, or what does it symbolize? Well, it's an ancient symbol of a snake or a serpent eating its own tail, and it's signifying infinity or a cycle of birth and death. And it's also believed that no demon can stand against the Ouroboros, and no god can either, and that's blasphemy. So these people are thinking they're shielding themselves from the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, who's going to come back this time, not as a humble servant, not as a lamb, but as a lion. So there are two hidden agendas here. One's beyond the universe, a metaverse, and then the belief, the false belief that no god or demon can withstand their Ouroboros. And this is where Christians must stand up. And that's what I'm going to get to at the end of this message, so I hope you stay tuned. And we must occupy and subdue and wait for Jesus to return. So in times like this, all social media could be suspect, folks. And we should bend our knee to Jesus as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. It's a time for all Christians to train our ears to the sound of that trumpet, to start to critically think and to understand the signs of the times all around us, because the beat is beginning to change, folks, and the dance will soon become frenzied. And I'm telling you, folks, this is it. Like Jonathan Cleck says, you know, last Sunday, Gons, canarycry.com, he was a guy, we've had him on our show. I was on his show a few times with Sister Kathy and Zen, and, you know, he's a friend. But he tweeted that the World Economic Forum said in 2030, you will own nothing and be happy. The psychology for how this happens is the metaverse. Time and value will be assigned to digital virtual goods, services, and experiences. Who needs physical stuff if you own code? So I replied to Gons, and he liked the tweet, and a lot of other people did too. Gons, if you want to see what life in the metaverse could look like, where time and value will all be digital, watch the Netflix series Black Mirror, Season 1, Episode 2. Folks, if you haven't seen the Black Mirror, you need to look at this. That particular episode was titled 15 Million Merits. And I gave the link, and then I went on to say, the peddling farms to generate power also look like a brainstorm right out of the Green New Deal. So what I queued up for you folks to listen to is an impassioned plea given by the main character. Now, this is set up in a world where everybody reports to their peddling station every day, if they're physically fit enough to do that, and they pedal on these exercise bikes to generate power for the system. And then the people that are unfit are called lemons, and they go around cleaning up all the garbage or detritus. And these people earn credits for peddling, and then they have to spend credits for everything from their toothpaste to their entertainment. And their entertainment is all built on the American Idol concept. So that's the scene that's set. And this is when the man actually got to the judges, you know, like Simon Cowell's, and I don't even know all those people that used to do those stupid shows. But anyways, this is his monologue where he basically sums up the metaverse. And that's where we're headed, folks. So listen to this 3-minute and 27-second clip.
I think we should let him speak.
Get our attention, as requested. What do you want to say?
Have you prepared a speech? Is that it?
Speak! I haven't got a speech, I didn't plan words, I didn't even try to. I just knew I had to get here, to stand here, and I knew I wanted you to listen. To really listen, not just pull a face like you're listening, like you do the rest of the time. A face that you're feeling instead of processing. You pull a face and poke it towards the stage, and we la-dee-da, we sing and dance and tumble around, and all you see up here, it's not people. You don't see people up here, it's all fodder. And the faker the fodder is, the more you love it, because fake fodder is the only thing that works anymore. Fake fodder is all that we can stomach. Actually, not quite all. Real pain, real viciousness, that we can take. Yeah, stick a fat man up a pole and we'll laugh ourselves feral, because we've earned the right. We've done so the time and he's slacking the scum, so ha 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 at him. Because we're so out of our minds with desperation, we don't know any better. All we know is fake fodder and buying shit. That's how we speak to each other, how we express ourselves, is buying shit. Well, I have a dream. The peak of our dreams is a new hat for our doppel. A hat doesn't exist. It's not even there. We buy shit. It's not even there. Show us something real and free and beautiful. You couldn't. Yeah? It'd break us. We're too numb for it. Our minds would choke. It's only so much wonder we can bear. That's why when you find any wonder whatsoever, you dole it out in meager portions. And only then, till it's augmented and packaged and pumped through 10,000 pre-assigned filters, till it's nothing more than a meaningless series of lights while we ride day in, day out. Going where? Powering what? All tiny cells and tiny screens and bigger cells and bigger screens. And fuck you! Fuck you, that's what both of us do, is fuck you. Fuck you for sitting there and slowly knitting things worse. Fuck you and just spotlighting the sanctimonious faces of fuck you all for taking the ones who never came close to anything real about anything. For oozing around it and crushing it into a bone, into a joke. One more ugly joke in the kingdom of millions of them fucks. Fuck you for happening. Fuck you for me, for us. For everyone, fuck you!
That voice, without a doubt, the most heartfelt thing I've seen on this stage.
Hot shot begins!
And I mean everyone in this hall. Something. And though we may not comprehend all of it, I think I'm right in saying we do feel it. Even me.
Folks, I apologize. I forgot to give you a profanity warning there. My deepest apologies. I forgot about the profanities in there. But I think that summed it up in terms of where this metaverse is headed. We're going to have virtual stuff for virtual reality. So our doppel from Doppelganger or your avatar is going to represent you in this world, and you're going to buy cute outfits and hats and fake cars for them as you stay in your little pod and pedal to generate power. The system is kind of like living in those pods in the Matrix and supplying the entire system, the power it needs, as your mind becomes your world or your metaverse. And if you watch some of these other episodes of the Black Mirror, you're going to see how this builds upon. Now, I never realized this, but Ethan at the plant was telling me your telephone or your iPad or your other personal device, shut it off and look at it. What color is it? Well, it's black. And what can you see in it? Or your reflection. And what other types of devices reflect your image in them? Well, mirrors. That's where this term black mirror for this show came from, folks. Our little phones, our smartphones, they are actually the chains that will bind us. They're going to be the foundation for the COVID passport, for the social credit scores. So if you have a stomach, folks, and you want to really be red-pilled, actually, I think this series red-pilled Terry. She actually called me at the plant yesterday and said, we have to let off on watching those. And typically that happens when somebody is jolted to reality by something. They have to pull back. But I encourage you, if you haven't seen it, to watch The Black Mirror. Now, right after I tweeted back to Gons, I see this article pop up, and I'm doing a little bit of my research for the show, and it's on the Daily Mail, and it's Israeli historian Yuval Harari warns humans must cooperate to stop human hacking. It's exactly what we were just talking about from the Black Mirror. So he's a best-selling author and a history professor, and he was interviewed by Anderson Cooper, and he told Cooper that human beings themselves could be hacked via the collection of data. And folks, it's bigger than that. Remember we had the Moderna executive on who said that we're hacking the human DNA, and then we played that Microsoft clip a few weeks back that talked about that. So in fact, I'm going to take a note for myself, and we want to play hacking DNA and Microsoft next week in our review of past episodes. Anyways, what he's telling Cooper is that countries must begin working together to prevent this hacking of humanity by AI or artificial intelligence as it collects data and much more, biometrics, voices. One of the episodes of Black Mirror is about a woman who loses her husband in an auto accident, and a friend of hers at the funeral tells her about this service where if you'll upload all your husband's texts and emails, you can actually talk to an AI entity by chat that mimics your husband's responses to whatever you say. And then as the technology develops a little later, they ask you to upload all the videos and voicemails and anything else with audio from your loved one, and then you can actually have phone calls with them. And then it shows how the technology progresses, and then you can actually have it integrated into an Android. And they ship you an Android to your house, and you have your loved one back, but it's really not your loved one. This is the type of theme that's in there. These folks think they can create eternity in a quote-unquote metaverse. You have to check this series out, folks. It's insane. So anyways, this best-selling author from Israel, Harari, claimed that the next step brought on by the pandemic will be making easier and more likely our medical data to be taken from us. And that's going to happen through these passports and everything. So I got to thinking, has there been any other predictive programming out there before Black Mirror? In fact, I see a lot of people out there that are talking about this movie called Ready Player One. And Terry and I watched it years ago when it came out, and I want to play the official clip for the trailer. It's a 2-minute and 29-second clip, so here it is.
My name is Wade Watts. My dad picked that name because it sounded like a superhero's alter ego, like Peter Parker or Bruce Banner. But he died when I was a kid, my mom too, and I ended up here. Sitting here in my tiny corner of nowhere, there's nowhere left to go. Nowhere. Except the Oasis. A whole virtual universe. People come to the Oasis for all the things they can do. But they stay because of all the things they can be.
Can you feel this?
Yeah. The only place that feels like I mean anything. The Oasis was the brainchild of James Halliday.
Hello. If you're watching this, I'm dead. I created a hidden object, an Easter egg. The first person to find the egg will inherit $500 billion and total control of the Oasis itself.
Who is this Parzival, and how the hell is he winning?
Find him. Just a game. I'm talking about actual life and death stuff.
The Oasis.
The world's most important economic resource.
And it's nothing less than a war for control of the future.
Welcome to the rebellion, Wade.
Like many of you, I only came here to escape. But I found something much bigger than just myself. Are you willing to fight?
Help us save the Oasis.
Folks, we need to stand up like David stood up against Goliath. We, the people, do have power, folks. So don't let them tell you we don't. You know, this week, and I've been doing more of this, I'm out there guerrilla marketing the podcast by going to very prominent Twitter accounts when there's something relevant. So I've done it with Minaj, Nicki Minaj when she was getting blasted for her comment concerning the vaccine. And then this week, old Dan Blather, remember Dan Blather? Well, he has a Twitter account with 12 million followers. He tweeted, still not over 1/6. It must be investigated. And I replied back, I agree, Dan, if you mean by investigation that the FBI involvement must be investigated, the agent provocateur John Sullivan must be investigated, and his contract with CNN to film the breach to the New York Post article that had all the documentation of this actual involvement. This activist, this radical leftist activist, John Sullivan, who was in the Capitol, arrested not once but twice by the federal authorities and released both times, when there are other people that were nothing but bystanders there who are, have been sitting rotting in a D.C. prison in inhumane conditions since early this year. So then I tweeted back at him again, Dan, why don't you let your friends over at 60 Minutes do suggest they do a blockbuster story like this one? Then I put a clip to the clip we just heard from the Indian television expose on Pfizer. So I picked up a lot of listeners from that this week. And welcome to all you folks. All I'm trying to do is wake people up. I just dropped some breadcrumbs along the way from my life's experiences and what I've been able to understand is truth, and that's the way it is. So then after that, I said, I wonder why 60 Minutes and other U.S. shows don't do pieces like this Indian piece. And then I put another clip up to his tweet, and I played to them the brought to you by Pfizer. Remember that clip? A 54-second clip?
Good Morning America is brought to you by Pfizer. CBS Health Watch sponsored by Pfizer. Anderson Cooper 360 brought to you by Pfizer. ABC News Nightline brought to you by Pfizer. Making a difference. Brought to you by Pfizer. CNN Tonight brought to you by Pfizer. Early Start. Brought to you by Pfizer. Friday night on Aaron Burnett Out Front. Brought to you by Pfizer. This Week with George Stephanopoulos is brought to you by Pfizer.
This weather report brought to you by Pfizer.
Today's countdown to the royal wedding is brought to you by Pfizer.
And now a CBS Sports Update brought to you by Pfizer.
Meet the Press Data Download brought to you by Pfizer.
This portion of CBS This Morning, sponsored by Pfizer.
On how to find the hidden sugars in the American family diet. Sponsored by Pfizer.
I think we all know why we don't hear any of the truth over here. We are bought and sold by Pfizer. And folks, I've covered it on past episodes that most of the FDA and CDC officials are former Pfizer employees and vice versa. It's a revolving door between the regulatory agency and the big pharma. It's a good old boys club. Truth isn't out there. Health efficacy isn't out there. Profits are. And on a higher, deeper level, something much more sinister than even money. It's population control. Sterilize these young children. They're not going to be able to have children. And we're going to get into that more in the Back to the Future episode, folks. But right now, it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. Henrietta, where are you? There you are. Okay, folks, if you're new to the show, you know this is the episode where we talk about prepping and some of the things we can do to get ready for all this craziness. So last week I talked about the way that you can use very small spaces, even if you live in an apartment, to grow food. And we talked about sprouting last week. Okay, so when you're in small spaces, you can grow a lot of food, and it doesn't have to take up a lot of room to do this. So don't say, oh, I live in an apartment in New York City. I can't grow my own food. You can grow your own food in an apartment in New York City.
Really?
Yes, Alvin, really. Now, I'm not talking about meat. I'm not talking about rabbits or chickens. Of course you can't do that, but you can grow vegetables. And you can sprout things. So last week we talked about the sprouting, and this week what I'd like to talk about is growing foods in this special hydroponic system, which is super easy and very limited on space. You could grow all of your vegetables in a closet in your apartment, folks. And it's a technology that was communicated by the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. And I hate that term, folks, human resources. Maybe I'll do a Ken's Corner on that next week. This is from the University of Hawaii at Manoa, and it's titled A Suspended Net Pot Non-Circulating Hydroponic Method for Commercial Production of Leafy Romaine and Semi-Head Lettuce. Now, you can grow other sorts of vegetables in there, from bok choy to, just about any sort of vegetable. Now, certain things you can't grow in there, but you could grow enough to eat some very healthy salads, and you need that for all your micronutrients. So this article gets into how you do this and how you can achieve this hydroponic system without any need for pumps or aerators or all the things that make normal hydroponics so complicated and space demanding, you know. So you, if you have limited space, you have a place to put a couple of those totes. You hang some LED grow lights, and you basically have all your vegetables. Now, thank you, Mike Adams. He did a great video on this. It's titled Preparing to Thrive in the Post-Collapse Economy, Scavenging Barter, Off-Grid Food Production, and Rescuing Survivors. If you can't find it on his website and you'd like to learn how to put one together, Mike has taken all the information out of this article published by the University of Hawaii, and he's reduced it to practice. So I can send you the article. I could send you a link to his video, and I think it's very important, folks. I'm encouraging you to prepare. They even explain how you store your seeds long-term in the article. Mike didn't get into that so much, but so I'm encouraging you to prepare. But right now, folks, it's time to move on to the Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
Now, folks, you know my position on election 2020. And I'm going to state it again before I play this update from Mike Lindell on the Bannon War Room this week. I believe the election was stolen. I believe the corruption is across all 50 states and involves both Republicans and Democrats. And when I say Republicans, I mean the Rhino Republicans. I believe Dominion voting machines and the others. And I believe there are foreign governments involved. And all of this has been documented. So I'm not saying any of this as speculation or as conspiracy theory. This has all been documented. What I don't believe, however, is that it's going to be reversed. And the reason I say that is because there's too much at stake. The deep state, these Luciferians, these people plotting this great reset and the New World Order, they have too much to lose. But I'd like you to hear Mike Lindell's 10-minute update to Steve Bannon on the War Room in terms of what's happening. Because it is something you need to know. So what Mike has here is real, folks. I just don't think anything's going to come of it. That's why it's in the Hopium Report.
I know you haven't had a chance to go through this morning consult poll, but it's stunning. And it shows you your relentless pursuit of truth has had an impact. 35%. And by the way, the poll, as Boris and I talked in the break, it's 2,000 registered voters. This is a big poll. This is not one of these ones you see that's got 150 people. This is 2,000. It's morning consult. It's the top polling of political, which just got sold for $1 billion to a German company, Axel Springer, right? This is all big league stuff. And it shows you the American people overturn the election. Let me repeat that. Overturn the election. Mike Lindell, you're having an impact. Now, I know you've got more you want to walk us through today, but I got to tell you, right off the bat, you're having a massive impact. This is now imprinted into the American people's mind. 27% of independents.
Right, thanks. And, you know, back in January 9th when I was handed all this evidence, I kind of felt like the only person out there raising their hand as we were getting attacked and canceled out. And But I think anybody that would have had what I had, whether you're Democrat or Republican, would have wanted to get this to the world and show this attack by China. Interesting, you brought up Pima County, too, and they, we actually know, we have all the names and everything that they used with our formulas or with our computer systems that we have now that we actually made for this. Shows 106% of the people that voted there. Well, you can say, well, maybe there was 99%, but when you go over 100% people, they're using fake names. And but it's very interesting. I said it before. I used to say when Donald Trump was in power, everybody loves our president. Some just don't know it yet. Now I say everybody knows this election was stolen. Some just don't know it yet. You know, it's the same thing. It's more and more people are coming over to this bucket because you know what? The truth is the truth. And it's been coming out and coming out and coming out. People just don't want to believe it, but now they want to believe it because they see what's going on. This isn't a normal party in power. This is the China. We jumped right over socialism to communism. And it goes right into the case we're bringing to the Supreme Court. Remember, November 23rd at 9 a.m., we're dropping the Supreme Court case that I've been promising for months. And everyone says, well, Mike, I'm getting impatient with you. I see this on social media yesterday. I went on and I said, you know what? I'm the most impatient person if you get to know me. I wanted it to happen right now. I wanted it to happen back on January 10th. The day after I got this, I go, are you kidding? All the answers were right there that explained everything, these huge numbers and dead people and non-residents that voted. People didn't go and do this stuff that, oh, I'm going to go vote over in Nevada. No, they used their names, everybody. They grabbed them off the voter rolls. They grabbed names from dead people, non-residents, people that they even voted for people like they did in the runoff in California. They're not even being shy about it now. They're just going, hey, you know what? These people they're probably not going to vote. So let's vote. Let's just vote for them and vote vote no to not impeach. Let me tell you, Steve, I looked up a thing on that. There was a thing today. It was like 90. It was this huge percentage of people voted in that recall but never voted otherwise. It was like a difference of 20 or 30%. Like, really, this person voted in a general election, but yet they didn't vote in that, but yet they went out and voted almost 100%. People voted in this of this certain age group that that they grabbed from.
Yeah,
so
that's crap. That's crap.
Yeah. Yeah, it's horrible.
Let's go back real quick. I know you got something to go
through. The case.
Yeah, but hang on. But I want to tie back. Because the audience for the last couple of days know about this Pima County. To get the overvote or 107% of the vote, how do you say that that shows you specifically that you're correct in what you're working on and that is kind of the end product? And you can tell this overvote is the tell.
Okay. Well, we've got, remember, we have all the cyber data. We have all the packet captures from the whole election. Now, let's just disregard that for a minute. Then you've got work like these are mathematicians. We'll just grab one, Doug Frank, physicist from Ohio. He went out and he found that every single state, every single county, you can go there and pick an age within that county, and that same percentage have voted in every other county. That's called an algorithm. It's impossible. In any other election in history, that didn't happen. 32% of Pima County, 32-year-olds, 32-year-older in Pima County, the same percentage of 32-year-olds voted in Maricopa County and everywhere in Arizona. That's impossible. Any other election, it's all over the board. Well, what we have, Steve, is we went around and we got the voter rolls. You can buy it. In Alabama, I had to pay $30,000-some out of my pocket to get that. Yeah, most states, it's free. So let's say Arizona. We have all the people that registered, all the people that actually voted, and then people that were on that they took off the registration voter rolls after the election. So you got these three footprints in time. Now we put them into this computer that's been developed by this company, separate company from mine. This is work they've done with many different. They've worked for the TSA. They've done work for the government before. They find deviations and stuff, and they use mathematics. But they took this, all these stuff from the election, put it in their system, and we had it made specifically for this election. So now you can go into Pima County. and I'm going to have this for your show. I just told, just got off the phone. I said, I want you to pull all of Pima County. They're going to pull Pima County, and what's going to show is you're going to pull up an address. Pick an address, 102 Fifth Avenue or whatever. And you go there, and it says that one person lives there. It's a one-person residence, but there'll be 14 or 15 names on there, all different last names, and they all voted. Now, when you go out canvassing, you find out, of course, they don't live there. And, of course, you know, they just use their name. So we combine computers with cyber evidence. They interlock, and then you find out that they just went out and grabbed names. It can be names from dead people, non-residents. They don't care where they pull these names from. And I'll give an example. In Wisconsin, 23,000 names were pulled when they had to react in Wisconsin. They all voted out of a prison address with the same phone number. Now, of course, they all didn't do that. People didn't do that. A computer did that to grab their names. That was what was done in our whole country, everybody, in every single state. They're using voter rolls. Now, Steve, we have another thing that came up. They're called poll books. They're electronic poll books. Now we can figure it right down to the precinct because the poll books are in there. They're electronic right next to the Dominion machines, ES&S, doesn't matter. They're online. Now you've got the poll books. It's like, here you go. You know, there's no security on this. There's nothing. We have been taken over by China. We're in unprecedented times. We're in uncharted territory. It's never been done in the history of our country. We were taken. We've been attacked. We have been attacked by China, and they took our country, and they did it in a blink of an eye. And that's where we're at.
How do you then, when you go around and make these presentations to the AGs, presentations, you bring the data, and it takes you, yep. Was it an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, and they've got people in there doing due diligence?
Well, there's been one particular state, and I told these guys, I promised I wouldn't bring them all up. It's all going to be anonymous when we sign it all on that, the 2 days before Thanksgiving, you know, however, whether it's 20, 30 AGs, whatever, they're all going to sign together. But when we go there, Steve, it's usually the first meeting will take about 2 hours because they want to see not just the cyber evidence, which, by the way, since the cyber symposium, we've got the evidence that, yes, China did this, hello, with help here in the U.S. So we show them that, and we show them the canvassing stuff we've done, and we show them their actual voters, you can pull it up, we pull it up, hey, look at this, pick an address, and we show them that. Then some of them will have, well, can you go out and do some canvassing? We're in 38 states now. We'll run out, we'll do canvassing. We have volunteers that they'll go out there and do canvassing. So we're actually knocking on the door to validate what we already know. You have an aerial shot from Google Analytics saying, here's this little tiny house, and 30 people voted there, and they all use the same phone number. Isn't that weird? They all use the same phone number. And some of them, in one particular state, there was 200 people exactly 127 years old. Okay, they're just using their names. This is all computer generated. It's a joke. Now what we do, by showing them that it happened in their state, now some of them are saying, hey, we say to them, can we go through your Dominion or your ES&S or your heart machine? Can we just do a little pathway here right through your router, what they wouldn't give you in Arizona? Because remember, inside the routers and the machines and the computers will show the same packet captures that match up to what we already had from the night of the election. So it's beautiful. Then they can see, and there's passwords, Steve, that were gathered.
Hold on. Hang on with the other stuff. Passwords, all that. We're taking a short commercial break.
Okay, folks, it's all there. I mean, when you have every single voting precinct reporting the same number, or I should say percentage, of people in a certain demographic voting, that's an algorithm, like he said. There's so much of this evidence there. But again, I don't think anything's going to come of it, so that's why it's in the Hopium Report. But right now, folks, it's time to move on. And right now, it's time for our Absurdian Report. Now, this one is full of some very absurd info.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life Mimics Theater
but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
So, I apologize, had my mic muted again. So, earlier in the episode, we heard two nurses, one give her update from Maryland and what she's seeing with regard to adverse reactions. I gave you the update from my sister at a local hospital, what she's seeing. And then we had the Kaiser nurse, who basically had her walk of honor, as I called it, as they had security usher her from the hospital because she refused to take the jab. I would say all that reporting was very rational. So these are the unvaxxed, supposedly the science deniers, supposedly the crazies. But what I'd like to do for you now is give you two examples of just how crazy the vaxxed actually are. So the first one here, I have this psycho woman on an airplane, and it's about 2 minutes and 20 seconds long. And she doesn't want to sit beside an unvaccinated person. But just listen to the way she handled it. And I'm going to ask you, who's crazy here, the vaxxed or the unvaxxed?
I work hard. I pay for my seat. Clearly, it's going to put my life in danger. Okay, so you're going to move him. That's how it's going to be.
I understand.
Then move him.
This is the full time.
I can't move anyone.
Do you want me to call a cop? Do you want to lose your job? Do you? Because right now you're violating my rights as a citizen, as a human being. You're intentionally putting me in danger.
I do not wish anyone to be in danger.
Thank you, then move him, ma'am.
This is a full flight. I can't move him.
I don't want to sit there. Do you want me to call the cops? Because I will. I'll call them right now.
You can't move people because they don't want to sit next to them.
He's violating our rights and our safety. I asked him for his vaccine card, and he doesn't have one because he's not vaccinated.
Hey,
you have to have a mask and be vaccinated.
You're not exactly wearing a mask.
I'm not wearing a mask because I have asthma. I have a health condition. I have children. I'm fully vaccinated to protect them. You're intentionally putting my health at risk right now.
If you wish to be on this flight, I need you to take a seat. Okay, that is a seat you paid for, and it's the only one.
I know the law. You're violating the law right now. You're completely breaking the law. You have to find me another seat.
It's not the law to be vaccinated to come on this flight.
You can't make me breathe his oxygen because he's not vaccinated. You're not listening to me.
If you wish to be on this flight, I need you to take your seat.
I'm not sitting there. You're putting my life in danger right now. I cannot be made to breathe his oxygen. That's not fair. Do you want me to see my children?
Yes,
are you putting them at risk?
I have one available.
I don't want to sit there. He's not vaccinated. You're intentionally putting my life in danger.
Now,
we are
not putting your life in danger.
I'm not going to sit there.
Ma'am, can you
sit there? No, I'm not sitting there. How many times do I have to see this?
I know how challenging air travel is these days, but there will be no discrimination on my
part. It's not discrimination.
Vaccinated or unvaccinated, we should respect each other.
Yes.
And as it seems, you have trouble doing that.
Please
exit the aircraft.
So who's the crazy there? The vaxxed or the unvaxxed? Well, it even gets worse than that, folks. There is a mother out there who on TikTok, I believe it was. Listen to this woman. It's a minute clip, and she's talking about when she's going to be able to vax her baby and then go out and kill you and me.
So finally, some good news. Kids can get the vaccine 5 and up. Starting next week. That's great news. And as soon as these guys can get it too, all bets are off. You anti-vaxxers, all bets are off. All bets are off. yeah, if I can spread it like unknowingly after that, I'm gonna sneak on you, a lot of you, a lot of you. All bets are off because we're all done. We're all done with you. So as soon as these guys can be safe, screw the rest of you. Screw the rest of you. Because we're done. We're done. Yeah. Yeah. No more kind liberal here. Done. Bad thing is some of your kids will die. But I hope they don't. Maybe they'll just take your kids from you. That'd be good.
So you got to wonder, folks, how much of this behavior in these vaxxed loonies is the result of the prion damage that's beginning in their minds from being jabbed with this Hydra death shot? And how much of it is just ingrained brainwashing from the government schools and the manipulative media? But either way, you know, God bless that innocent child from the harm this mother wants to inflict upon it. I mean, this was a baby sitting in her lap. You know, that last one was probably the type of person, and watch that word, who holds a grudge and is petty and nasty. And you see a lot of that with these normies. They're, you know, think about it. They've been locked in their domiciles so long, months and now years, had a lot of time to stew in their own juices and create a bitterness equal to Cain, you know, in the Bible. It's biblical almost. And then add to that the propaganda that hour upon hour upon hour on the TV. And then they're being told that life's not going to get back to normal until those anti-vaxxers get the jab. So just slosh that around in her prion infected brain for a while. And you get what you just witnessed with those two clips. But right now, folks, it's time for Ken's Corner. Spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
So what I'd like to share with you today has already been alluded to earlier in the show, and that's the sovereignty movement. Now, years ago, I got involved with the sovereignty movement through a group called Right Way Law out of Ohio, and the law stood for Learn and Game. And what they basically taught you was the games that are being played by the legal system, and they taught the meaning of words. And, you know, folks, these manipulators are masters at what they do. And they make words mean things that you don't think they mean. And we're learning that through Stephen Jacobson and the Wake Up America clips that we play every week. But this also applies to the legal system. You know, everything that's legal is not lawful. Lawful applies to the natural law, the law of God, and common law. But legal applies to this maritime system, this fraud that's foisted upon people where they become persons and indistinguishable from corporations. So basically when you're born, you're issued a certificate of live birth known as your birth certificate. And there's two dates on that certificate, the day you are actually quote-unquote born or docked and the day that the certificate was issued. No different than when a corporation is born and becomes a person on the issue date that the state, the quote-unquote state, in this metaverse created under a legalese system. So they make you think you're a person when you're actually a sovereign man or woman, and collectively we're known as people, not persons. See, they want to make you indistinguishable from a corporation so that they can manipulate you. But when you go into these situations, if you're not very careful, you get drawn in. Now, I don't even have to share any of this with you anymore. I mean, this gets so deep. After you're born and that certificate of live birth is issued, a UCC-1 filing is made against your straw man and your name always appears on government documents in all capital letters. Folks, that is not you, the living being, the breathing being, the spirit-filled servant, son, and saint of the Most High God. No, it's referring to your corporate entity, which they can put all kinds of rules and regulations over. So this is all very important. Here's a news flash. Did you know children are your property in common law? If you understood that, folks, CYS and all this other garbage that goes on with people that are losing their children over refusing to be vaccinated would all stop in a heartbeat. All you have to do is go into that particular court, never recognize their jurisdiction, never admit you're a person, but refer yourself as a sovereign man or woman, and ask to see the man or woman with the authority in that court to make right an illegal possession of property. And a lot of times that black-robed man or woman will get out and walk out. This has been effectively done. I want to thank my sister-in-law, Sue, for waking me up to this warrior out there now. He has a website called Warrior Calls. His name is Christopher James, and he was on Mike Adams discussing common law and this corporate personhood. And you can find that out on the Health Ranger page on Brighteon.com. So to a warriorcalls.com and start to learn who you are. This is what we the people need to do and how we're going to stand up as David stood up to Goliath and slew him with that one single rock in his sling. But right now, folks, it's time for Back to the Future. The episode where we take the segment in this episode where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. So what we're going to do this week, folks, is wind the clock back to 1819. And in a book titled The History of Brazil by Robert Salfi, the term zombie was coined in the English language. Actually, it was a radical leader from Brazil named Zumbi. But basically, the term zombie was coined in the English language. Now let's wind the clock ahead to 1937. Zora Hurster was researching Haitian folklore when she came across the story of a woman who came back from the grave as a zombie. So she published it in her documentation that she put together after her research was completed. And then this was picked up by a man named Wade Davis from Harvard. He was an ethnobotanist, and he published it, his findings, in the Journal of Ethnobotanology in 1983, where he talked about these herbal concoctions that could induce a death-like state in individuals. It could appear that they had no heartbeat or vital functions. They would be buried and then later rose. And he explained how through peer pressure and quote-unquote brainwashing, these people would believe they were the undead. And that's basically your zombie. Now, I think where it really came into the social fiber and became something valuable was that classic from 1968, I believe it was. And I didn't write any notes down on this, so I'm just trying to call this up right now. So you got this zombie fiction, and Night of the Living Dead, Romero, I think his name was. They filmed it in the Monroeville Mall about 20 miles down the road from me right here, folks, in western Pennsylvania. But then you had the movies that were out, and what was it called? Z, something Z, and then there's the all the series that are on TV. But we have zombies in the collective consciousness. In fact, the CDC even came up with surviving zombie apocalypse. Now, how does this apply? Well, there's an article that just came out, and it's basically telling you everything. It's let me just read the title. SARS-CoV-2 spike impairs DNA damage repair and inhibits VDJ recombination in vitro. Now, this was written by two researchers from the Department of Molecular Biosciences in Stockholm, University, Stockholm, Sweden. And it's a peer-reviewed paper, folks. And it's basically saying, in conclusion, that they found the spike proteins markedly inhibited both the BRCA1 and the 53BP1 foci formation. And this is basically how the body repairs itself when DNA are damaged by radiation, by chemicals, by something as simple as sunlight. This DNA repair mechanism, which is known as the non-homologous end joining, stopped or impaired, and then you start to create mutations, cancers, and all sorts of abnormal growths on bodies. So these mutations or these errors in the genetic sequencing start to manifest as cancers, which a lot of pathologists are reporting right now. And if it doesn't kill you, it starts to create abnormal growths on the bodies of these victims. So you see an explosion of cancer and cancer tumors, a loss of your immune system, autoimmune disorders, accelerated aging and reduced telomeres in length. And that's all related to aging and the loss of a function of some of your complex organs. So there's now going to be both the disease, which makes you act like a zombie, and then this disruption to the DNA repair mechanism in your body, so you're going to end up looking like a zombie. And now, of course, a lot of these effects, these side effects to the jabs are fatal, but others are going to actually be horrendously disfigured, and their minds are going to be destroyed through the prions, and they're going to be literally walking our streets in mass, and it's going to look like a zombie apocalypse, folks. It's a Luciferians have woven, isn't it? Now, in addition to acting like zombies, the ones that don't die right away from this jab, they'll mutate and look like a zombie if the cancer doesn't kill them first, and then they're going to come out and try to kill you. Do you see the absurdity of this? Do you see how insane this world we're living in? So right now, folks, I have to ask you a question. If you could live like a king in victory, would you? Would you, folks? Well, I'm telling you, the truth is that we are sovereigns. Sovereigns on this land with a right to property. Okay? That's an unalienable right. It's delineated in the Declaration of Independence in our founding document. So we have an unalienable right given to us by God for property, our lives, and our sacred honor. So what I'd like to do today is focus on that story, that classic story of David and Goliath. And I'm sure we've all heard about it, but we need to be motivated to operate from victory. Victory won at the cross by Jesus Christ and that incredible work he did on the cross when he overcame sin and death. So we need to stand on that victory as we fight for truth. So I want to look at that classic story of David and Goliath. And you could read about it in 1 Samuel chapter 17. So the story, we know there's a vicious enemy, Goliath. He's a prototype of Satan. And then there was that vicarious encounter between David, who is a precursor to Jesus in this battle, who stood there all alone and fought for the nation Israel. So there's a lot of spiritual parallels between Goliath and Lucifer or Satan and David and Jesus. And we could spend time on that, but instead of getting into all of that, what I'd like to do is look at three principles that are outlined there in this first book of Samuel, chapter 17, that both David and then later Jesus applied when he was here on earth to become victors. And folks, you and me can apply these same truths as we go out there and battle these lies and stand the truth. First one's persistence. You know, battles are won by those who are persistent. And that's very true in every aspect of our lives, from relationships to our physical health to even our careers. But nowhere is it more important than in our spiritual lives. You know, the Bible says in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse, David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." So here David had a purpose in his heart, and he knew what he had to do, and he had to do it regardless of the dismay that was found in others. So yeah, all the people around him when he made this offer to the king, there were many around him who were dismayed. They were frightened. It says in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 1, Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistine. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. And then in verse 24, we see it reads, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So, you know, folks, fear is infectious. And remember, fear is false evidence about reality. And that's what's being used by these Luciferians to get people in general, the normies, to comply. So it's infectious. But praise the Lord, King David, he wasn't intimidated by their fear. Now, in your personal battles, you're going to learn that you're surrounded by these cowards. They're weak-kneed people that tell you that it can't be done. Just give in. Resistance is futile. Just go along to get along. I'm sure you've all heard that, folks, especially with these vax and face masks mandates, because if you're not careful, that same stinking thinking is going to infect you. So David was persistent in the midst of all these who were dismayed around him. Think about it. The fear of man made King Saul a coward, yet the fear of God made King David a hero, praise the Lord. You know, David had his eyes fixed upon God, so he was filled with a purpose, and he had a persistence in spite of the dismay all around him by others, even the king himself. And then we see in verse 28 of 1 Samuel chapter 22 that Eliab, King David's eldest brother, spake these unto the men, and his anger was kindled against David when he heard what David was going to do. And he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. Can you just hear his big brother ridiculing him? The scorn of his brother? But not only was there this dismay, others had a disdain for him, and I think you could see some of that right there in his exchange with his big brother. They looked down on David. And when you stand for truth and you try to share this, people are going to look down on you too. And the devil, so many from standing in victory. But I'm telling you, praise the Lord, David refused. Yeah, he stood firm. Well, how about you? Whether you're in high school or at work or at home, are you going to go along to get along with these harmful and freedom-robbing mask and vax mandates? Are you? Are you going to stand up and say no? Are you going to let others ridicule you? Or will you stand up for Jesus when others take his name in vain? Are you afraid of the truth and the fallout that comes from sharing the truth? Or are you going to be bold? Remember, King David had a purpose, and he was going to do it, and he did it. In the midst of that dismay and that disdain. And then on top of that, there was also discouragement coming from these people. In verse 33, Saul asked David, thou art not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war. Now remember, this was King Saul. Not only was he the king, but he was an expert warrior, and he was a big man. You can read about that in the descriptions of King Saul. And he's saying to David, forget it, you can't do this. So he's the expert here. And can't be done. Nope. Sound like the experts today? Those telling you that face masks work and that these experimental genetic technologies are the way to get back to normal? And ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and chlorine dioxide, they don't work. In fact, if you do that, you could be disbarred. You could be taken from your right to practice medicine. You can be imprisoned. Why? For helping people. These folks who have rebranded experimental DNA technology as vaccines, the same folks that are lying to you about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. Well, folks, just know this. When you're ready to face your Goliath, you'll face three types of people who are going to try to scorn you, ridicule you, discourage you, share their fear with you. You're going to face them. People full of disdain, laughing at you, full of discouragement, saying it can't be done. And those just screaming, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. You better get the jab or you're going to die. How about that woman on the plane, folks? So you got to learn how to close them out and keep your sights fixed on God. Go to him in his throne room and ask him for his strength. If you listen to those naysayers, folks, I'm telling you, you're going to be defeated. Folks, I believe that David was mighty for God because he spent a lot of time alone with God. Think about it. Think about all the time he had when he was out there tending the flocks. And thank God he didn't have an iPhone and those iBuds, huh? Or he could have had his iTunes blasting and he'd never had that quiet time with God, and we probably would have never had Psalm 23. So what did David do? Well, when he was out there in the wilderness tending the sheep, he fixed his eyes and was upon the Lord, and then he wrote, "The Lord is my shield, my strength, and my buckler." And David said, "I don't care what Saul says. I don't care what Eliab, my brother, or anyone else says. I only care what God has to say." And that's the principle of persistence, folks. So King David had a purpose. And that principle of persistence was as he went out to execute his purpose. Now, some of us never win because we never show up for the battle. We're too afraid. We're discouraged. I once heard a man bragging about how great a Christian he was, and he said, "I'm not afraid of the devil." Well, the question. The question is the devil afraid of you? You know, the Bible says, resist the devil, and he will flee. But not only was David applying the principle of persistence, he also applied this principle I'm going to call progression. Now, he said, Saul said to David, "You can't do it." But then listen to what David said to Saul. David said to Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." So this is what I call the principle of progression. And what I mean by that is that first David fought a lion, then a bear, and then and only then was he ready to fight the giant, the Philistine Goliath. So just like Jesus, David went from victory to victory, and that's how he became known for the story of David and Goliath. Just like Jesus, who first met Satan out in the desert there. You remember, Jesus pre-existed. He saw Satan or Lucifer fall from the sky when he was cast out from heaven. But, you know, here on earth, as incarnate Son of God and God the Son, he first defeated Satan in private out in the wilderness, and then again in the Garden of Gethsemane, and then and only then was Jesus ready to defeat Satan in public at Calvary. So you have to progress. You have to grow in your spiritual strength, and that's the point I'm trying to make here. And that's how David went from victory to victory. That's how Jesus, as God incarnate, went from victory to victory, and that's how you and me will do. You can't just go out there and stand up to these people one day. You have to be prepared. You have to be ready for this. The Bible says that he that is faithful in that which is least is also faithful in that which is much. Now, some of us won't be ready when the Incredible Hulk comes along because we haven't been faithful in these little things. So the truth is that if you want to know what a man's truly made of, watch him in the little things. Then watch how he responds or reacts when the crisis comes along. So God, if God could use a man like David, tending a few sheep out there, by first preparing him to defeat a lion and then a bear, and then and only then Goliath, he can use you if you're prepared to grow with him, to walk along with him. So David was tried and proven through this principle of progression. And then, and only then, was he ready for the battle with Goliath. So let's apply this to money and giving just for a minute. Now, in truth, the whole idea of tithing kids stuff, folks, 10%, a dime on every dollar, heck, we give more to Social Security as self-employed. Terry and I have to do 16.8% of our income to self-employment tax. So I'm telling you, 10% to the church, trust Jesus with a dime out of a dollar. What are you going to do when the big financial situations come along? So don't think you've arrived if you're out there tithing, folks. You've got to give until it hurts. So we've seen David apply these principles of purpose and progression, and I want to wrap it up now with this principle of power. You know, David didn't go out there and face Goliath in his own power and his own might. No. In spite of the fact that he had purpose and he progressed in his growth, he knew where his power came from. And you could read about that, and I don't have time to read it, but it's in verses 38 through 46. And I'm just going to read verse 45. That's our focus scripture. 1 Samuel chapter 7, verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword and a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." And that's where all the point lies, folks. These verses, which I encourage you to read after the show, they describe the principle of power, which we all must apply as believers. So what was this power that rests upon this sanctified individual, this man set apart, this little guy, King David, who was nothing but a ruddy boy? What enabled him to stand and defeat the giant Goliath? Well, first of all, recognize that these are powerful spiritual methods we're talking about here. First, he refused King Saul's armor. Now, King was a huge man, and David was just a little boy at the time, and he knew he couldn't use it. When he put it on, it was like, you ever see those movies where the boy puts his dad's suit on and he's standing there and it's oversized? Well, that's kind of what it was like. Now, remember, when we go up against Satan and his minion, we cannot use unsanctified weapons. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." So we're not going to overcome Satan with psychology or positive thinking or working out at the gym or going to the target range and, you know, putting them all in the middle circle and scoring straight tens. No, that's not how we do it. The world's going to outwit us every time we use these methods. And had David worn Saul's armor, he would have been defeated by Goliath. Remember, the weapons of our warfare, they're not carnal, folks. So what's the church using in this battle today? Well, sadly, so many are using fancy marketing and entertainment methods to get people in. But these are not tried and true and proven methods of spiritual warfare. They're not. You know, David and you and me as believers need to have the shield of faith, the sword of the Spirit, and the armor, you know? So there's this powerful method, and we also have a powerful master. That's what I opened up with. Remember King David? Yes, he had a powerful master, and that's none other than the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ. So David said to Goliath, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a shield, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied." And that's none other than Jesus, folks. So Jesus came in the power and the name of God himself. And that's what we need to do, folks. As you stand, if you start to do this sovereignty movement, as you stand like those nurses do, if you stand against all those crazies out there, remember, your power comes from the master, and you have to be under the master. Now, finally, and I got to wrap this up because I'm running out of time, there's a motive. And what was his motive? It's all for the honor, glory of God. You can read that in verse 46. So his motive was SDG. Sola Dea Gloria. That's what these messages are called. Solely for the honor and glory of God, folks. And that's my motive, and that's why I fight this battle. So when you get the right method and the right master and the right motive, there's a power that's in sanctified, spirit-filled people that goes beyond anything this world can fathom. And when you do that, folks, I'm telling you, you will be able to slay giants. And then God will be glorified. So if you want to be filled with the Holy Spirit, you need to reduce all your goals and all your aims to one thing, and that's Jesus be glorified. And then you're going to be automatically filled. And when you're filled with this power, goes beyond anything, you're going to be operating from victory to victory. And in the end, Jesus will be glorified. And that's the principle of purpose that we all need to have. solely for the glory of God. And folks, I'm telling you, when you do that, you're going to start to bear the fruits and gifts of the Spirit, and you're going to work with the Holy Spirit to get other people saved, and we're going to slay dragons. Folks, in the words of Winston Churchill, I encourage you to stand in the power of the Spirit and never give in. Never give in. Never give in.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And remember, folks, that power that King David had to slay Goliath, that was the power of the Holy Spirit from on high. And that same Spirit that rose Jesus from the grave, and that same Spirit was in you and me. And let's just lift it up with Jeremy Camp.
We're living in a very defining time in our generation, where fear is creeping in and the uncertainty of the unknown is everywhere.
I can see what is raging at my feet. I can feel the breath of those surrounding me. I can hear the sound of nations rising up. We will not be overtaken. We will not be overcome. I can walk.
There's an urgency like never before in my heart to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ, to show a world that looks like there is no hope that in Jesus alone you will find that hope and peace, to stand up in the midst of adversity and tribulation, and to show the unconditional love of our Savior while not shying away from speaking the truth of God's Word. Cry out for change in our world, but many times you are left asking, how can I make a difference? What do I do next? The truth is, we can do nothing. In our own strength and our own power, we will fail. But Jesus himself said to the disciples, I leave with you my Spirit. In Romans 8:11 it says, if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, will also give life to your mortal bodies through his Spirit who dwells in you. Let's step out in his power. Let's proclaim the name of Jesus in boldness and love. And when the attacks come from all sides, walk in the understanding that greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. Because the enemy has been defeated and the victory is in Jesus.